Baseball fans, and welcome to today's edition of A Podcast to Be Named Later. I am your host, Chris Mitchell, and there is a lot to get to here. Baseball season is just around the corner. We have less than, 10 days until opening day? I cannot wait. Opening day is fantastic. Then the real opening day when all the other games are, there are two games on opening night technically this year. Normally there's just that one ESPN game, but I guess they're going to be doing two, one earlier in the day and one in the night game. So they're changing up a little bit. But then the next day, I love March Madness, which is going on right now. Everyone who's even a remotely aggressive fantasy, anyone who's a sports fan in general has to love March Madness. I know George Kurtz, who's joining me today, he's going to be talking baseball with us. I don't think he's a basketball guy, but March Madness is great. The first day or two, both days of March Madness are phenomenal. I don't know how anyone gets any work done on those days. But the second opening day, where they have the 1 o'clock games, I get nothing done that day other than ideas. I get just tons of ideas. I have my email open and I just type out, what about this? All day long, from 1 o'clock until 1 a.m., nothing but baseball games. It's a phenomenal day. I love the quote unquote second opening day. And we're not that far away from that. This is going to be fantastic. Love the baseball season. I love that the winter was so mild. We actually had snow the other day on March 22nd, we had snow, which is ridiculous. But what a fantastic winter that's going to lead right into a phenomenal spring here with baseball coming up. And we're going to address some of it today here. We're going to do a little bit of a preview show. We're going to look at 2016. We're going to talk about spring training. Does it matter? Do we care about spring training even a little bit? I know, because I talk a lot of fantasy sports, that people definitely look at it. The impact of someone playing well versus playing poorly definitely has an impact on when players get drafted in fantasy leagues. And I think, and I'm going to ask George this question, does fantasy sports impact the way people view regular sports? And I think it does. Obviously, it impacts us a little bit because we know the stats. We know if you're a daily fantasy sports guy, you know the splits and things like that. So it impacts our knowledge. I think fantasy sports actually makes us more informed. But I also think it impacts how we see things. And one of the ways that it does this, I write about minor league prospects both at rotoexperts.com as well as for minorleagueball.com, which is where this podcast gets posted. And there are a lot of shortstops coming up through the minor leagues right now and a lot of really good ones. And if you look at the top 50 or the top 30 rankings right now from all the different sites, whether it be MLB Pipeline or Baseball America, or whether you look in at any of the fantasy sports sites, there's a lot of shortstops in the top 25 or 30. And they're really good ones. It's not like they're mediocre guys. These are really good shortstops, but they're not very good fantasy shortstops. So when you look at it, the difference really is defense. You look at a Keith Law list, who he doesn't care about fantasy sports. I actually think he gets angry at fantasy sports. But he looks a lot at defense. He looks at the statistical merits and doesn't even factor in fantasy sports whatsoever. And I think MLB Pipeline does a lot of that as well. And they don't even factor in fantasy, and they shouldn't be. They're writing about Major League Baseball, so fantasy sports shouldn't be impacting them. But they've got tons of shortstops up on their list. Gleyber Torres from the Mets is getting a lot of hype. Trea Turner is at the top of all prospect lists right now. But then you've got Orlando Arcia in Milwaukee. You've got Jorge Mateo from the Yankees, who's a few years away, but he's a hyped shortstop. And then you've got some of these drafted guys like Brendan Rodgers and Dansby Swanson, who is off the charts hyped as the number one overall selection. And when you look at the fantasy lists, a lot of those shortstops get moved up those lists as well. But the stats just aren't there. If you're a fantasy guy, the shortstops just don't produce a whole lot. Now, these are shortstops that are going to be good for fantasy shortstops, but they're not really good fantasy players if you just ignored position. If you fielded 9 players and the position was irrelevant, very few shortstops would actually make a fantasy roster. And that's how I sort of look at players. And yet you do see some of these shortstops ranked highly on these fantasy rankings. And I think it's a lot of it because they're ranked highly on the normal Major League Baseball rankings. And I think that's a mindset, and I think that is impacted. I think fantasy and Major League Baseball, they blend together. They impact how you look at – we don't care about batting average anymore in baseball, but it does matter in fantasy sports. There aren't a lot of 30-home-run guys, so I look and say, okay, this guy's a 30-home-run guy. He's really good. This guy hits 15 or 16, so he's just mediocre. That's not actually true. A guy who hits 18 to 20 homers is actually a good player. But because of my fantasy outlook and things, I just think I look at things a little bit differently now. Well, I'll ask George that question. We'll also talk about players to watch, both to avoid players, rookies that could possibly bust out, talk about veterans that could regress, the busts and the breakouts, surprises and disappointments, things of that nature. We'll get into that a little bit. And we'll go a little bit all off the field as well. Maybe talk rule changes, though. I don't think we'll have time for that, to be honest with you. I've already rambled for 5 or 6 minutes. But I don't know if we'll get into the rule changes or not, or if it really matters. It seems kind of weird to me that they made some changes when it comes to second base as far as trying to minimize the contact, and yet they got rid of the neighborhood play, which existed to protect players. So they got rid of a protection and brought in so that players can't attack these guys when sliding mostly into second base. So I guess they figured we don't need the neighborhood play if players aren't allowed to slide outside of the baseline in order to just to break up double plays. To me, I don't know. I don't like to see, and then they also want to speed up the game, but yet they're making more and more reasons for instant replay. So it seems to me like they've been acting a little bit schizophrenic, and maybe we'll touch on that a little bit. And then the Adam LaRoche fiasco, and I call it a fiasco because it's up and down. Excuse me. It's up and down. Opinions are varied. First, Adam LaRoche comes out and screams and moans, and well, he doesn't scream and moan. He just retires. He leaves $13 million on the table, and he leaves his team in a tiff. He goes out pouting because they don't want his son in the locker room. And we later find out that, A, it was part of his negotiations when he first joined the team that he wanted his son to be allowed in the locker room all the time, which to me is the craziness. That I can't believe. Negotiating your son into your contract, not officially, but maybe as a side agreement, a verbal agreement. And he got a lot of praise for that. Chris Sale was very animated in defending LaRoche and really ripping Kenny Williams. Basically, I think he even said he should resign. And he basically, he didn't say it word for word, but he called him gutless and all these different things. And so there was a lot of defense. Then we find out a few days later that players complained that they didn't want his son in the locker room. There was some defense that they said, we love the kid. He's a good kid. He helps out. We're glad he's here. A few people said that, and that was, I think, the initial reaction of all the fans out here. Then we find out later, and someone leaked it, or maybe the owner came right out and spoke it. I'm not exactly sure which it was. But somehow the news got out that players had complained about his son being in the locker room. And to me, that's really what the story is, and I'm not surprised to hear that at all. Because baseball is 162 games a season, and they have, even in their off days, they're at the stadium sometimes. They're traveling. These guys spend a lot, the majority of their year is spent in the clubhouse or in the locker rooms. Excuse me, again. The majority of their time is spent in the clubhouse or the locker rooms, and they do a lot of things there. They play poker. They watch things. They talk with profanity. They speak about inappropriate things. They talk about the women they hooked up with or the crazy groupies that stalked them at the clubs last night. And you think of all the raunchiest things you can possibly have going on in your life and all the things you want to share with your buddies but that you would never talk about with your children or with your wife or even with family members. You think about all the things that can go on in the locker room that are appropriate but maybe not exactly for everybody's ears. Then you look at the inappropriate things, whether it be, oh, I got stoned beyond belief last night, or I hooked up with this hottie last night, or I hooked up with 3 hotties last night. Do you want a 13-year-old kid in the locker room essentially forcing you to behave in a way that is probably appropriate, but it forces you to not behave the way you want to? You have to be cautious. You have to be a little bit careful about what you're doing and what you're saying. The locker room is essentially your man cave for these guys. And so having a teenage kid in the locker room, to me, it forces them to behave in ways that they don't – it forces them to censor themselves. And so I think LaRoche, to ask the team to allow his kid to be in the locker room essentially every day – I don't think he was in there every day. I don't know the exact details. But for him to almost be there all the time, that is an extremely selfish act on LaRoche's part. And I can understand it. You want to be around your son. You want to give your son that experience. What an experience that would be. I got to tell you, I'm jealous. I would love to have been able to spend every single day in the locker room of a major league team with my dad. That would be an amazing thing to be able to have for a kid. And so I can understand why LaRoche wants to do that. But it's not fair to force the other players to deal with that. You know, they don't come over to your house and just hang out in your living room all every day. You shouldn't be forcing them to live with your kids. If they want to act inappropriate and play pranks and throw underwear at each other and talk about dirty things and inappropriate things and use vulgar language, that's what they should be allowed to do in a locker room, in a clubhouse. That's their man cave for work. And so for LaRoche to basically on the team, to me, is completely and totally unacceptably selfish. Occasionally, sure, you want to bring your kid in there once in a while. He gets to hang around the team a little bit. That's fine. But every single day, I'm not surprised one bit that players complain to ownership. And I'm a little bit surprised that ownership would ever have allowed it in the first place. And it's not like Alan LaRoche was this gigantic signing. Like Albert Pujols, he signed a $250 million contract. The owner would have given him anything. He probably would have given him his own kid. So it doesn't surprise me. It does surprise me a little bit that they would give this concession. And I'm surprised it took this long for them to get fed up with it. And it looks like the worm is turning a little bit there. But anyway, that's my rant on Adam LaRoche. Again, we're talking baseball today. We'll touch a little bit of fantasy baseball as well. We're talking with George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com, as well as a SiriusXM radio host. You can follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz. You can follow me, at CJMitch73. Or if you'd like to talk baseball with us on Facebook, you can do that. It's a podcast to be named later. Just join the group. I'll let you in and then post all the topics that you want to. But today we're previewing 2016, looking a little bit at in the fantasy baseball as well. George, how's everything going with you? I apologize for taking a little bit too much time in my little rantings there. You know I can ramble and babble, but thanks a lot for coming on and talking some baseball today.
Well, I'm happy to be here, Chris. I always have to talk a little baseball. We're only about like 10 days from the opening day, so it's you know, it's getting warm, getting closer to Sunday night game to the Mets and Royals.
If you had to pick the story of the year, I'm asking you to predict here. So put your predictor hat on, get out your crystal ball. If you had to predict what the story of 2016 is going to be based on what you know right now, I know it's a tough question. I love putting you on the spot. But what do you think, or maybe two or three stories? I'll give you a couple of options so that if you hit 300, then you're still being a success here. But just predicting now, today, what are the stories for 2016 going to be? What are a few you think that might be?
Well, I think if you want to go on the negative side, domestic abuse. I really think Chapman gets suspended for 30 games. How many is Jose Reyes going to get? We're all assuming minimum half the season. You know, if Chapman got 30 games and he wasn't in charge and there's really no evidence, what does Reyes get when he's going to court? Now, if he gets convicted, what does that mean? So that'd be my first thing. I think the negative side of all that. On the positive side, I think we all want to see what the Mets rotation does. You know, I'm not a Mets fan, but, you know, that rotation matched Harvey, Syndergaard, DeGrom, Wheeler when he comes back. I mean, think about it. Have you really seen a rotation like this since the 70s? In the Orioles in the 70s led by Jim Palmer? I mean, it's that good. So that's a positive story there. And I think the next one, how about the Kansas City Royals? Can they go back to the World Series for a third straight year?
Yeah, and I guess you'd have to point to the Atlanta Braves, and this staff is probably better. I don't know if you'd say that the Mets staff is better at the top, though you could argue stuff-wise they are. But to predict three Hall of Famers at the top of this staff, that could happen, but that would be a pretty aggressive projection. But yes, when you go to five, right all the way down to five, when you add the quality of their four and five compared to when they had Avery, who wasn't a bad pitcher either at certain periods during those Braves days, that's the more recent one for me. The Orioles 70s a little bit before my time. I think I was a sperm at that time and then a little baby, so that was a little bit before my days, but I think the Braves, and I think there's an interesting argument to be made that the Mets could be better. I agree. I think the Mets are going to be actually a team that regresses. I actually think last year was a little bit lucky. Everything fell their way, and I wrote an article for MinorLeagueBall.com, and I talked about how they were, I think it was 26 games above 500, or maybe it was 18 games, above 500 within the division, and then they were 500 outside of it. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. They didn't beat the Cubs at all, I think, or they didn't beat the Pirates. They were winless in those two against both of those teams. And then they had mediocre or below 500 records against a lot of other teams outside of their division. And with this year, the Nationals are still, I think, a good team, not as good maybe as last year. And they had their problems anyway. But I think the Mets are a team that are going to regress. I think they're going to win less games. They might make the playoffs. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could make the playoffs, though I think there's a pretty good chance that, again, the Central kind of swipes everything. So it's going to be tough to get that last wild card spot. But I think the Mets are going to regress, and I think they're going to win less games, and it's going to be and maybe Suspedes then opts out, so it all kind of avalanches on them. But do you think that's possible? Do you think that's likely, or are you still predicting them to win the NL East?
Oh, I wasn't predicting anything. I just said the rotation is the storyline. I didn't say the Mets were going to make the playoffs in the division or anything like that. I mean, you put the problem right. That type of division is a nightmare for everybody else in the National League. But, you know, what the Mets did last year, I mean, the numbers are the numbers. They beat up on their own division, not too much against the other. Is that going to change this year? Braves are terrible. Marlins are terrible. I mean, that alone. I mean, the Mets are going to do well. You know, Braves and Phillies are terrible. Marlins are probably an average team. Mets could easily beat up on all three of those teams. And then if it comes down to the Nationals, the team the Mets handled pretty well last year. You know, so it really comes down to it's the Mets and Nationals to win that division. But you're right. The loser has a problem. Because the Pirates, Cubs, Cardinals, I mean, wow. I mean, you took a really good team. You have the Dodgers in there, too. The Dodgers and Giants, coming up to win that division. The Diamondbacks are likely to be involved as well. So there are going to be some decent teams left out. The Mets, I mean, I'm not worried about their pitching. It's going to come down to their hitting. And I know I still don't think they have much of it. I mean, I'm not a huge Suspedes fan this year, but he certainly helps. But they need Conforto to hit. They need Duda to hit. And I know Granison to do what he did last year and hit. Will the Mets make another big acquisition at the deadline again to help out? Now, they might. But with this ownership group, you just never know if they're going to make that make that addition. And plus, they sold a lot of what they had last year. Do they have enough in the minors to make a deal? The answer would be yes, but they have top-end prospects. So they want to trade a Dominic Smith, some of that ilk, to go out and get what they need. It'll be interesting, but I think the Mets and Nationals will be tooth-and-tooth all season long.
Yeah, and I agree to some degree. I don't agree quite to the degree that you kind of expressed it there when it comes to the NL East. I don't think it's one of the best divisions. And you look at the West, how much better the Diamondbacks and the Giants got. That makes it that much more difficult to make the wild card. The St. Louis Cardinals may fall back, and maybe they're not as dominant a team as the past. So maybe that gives an opportunity to somebody. But I think the Marlins got better. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? No. Do I think they're going to win 85 games and miss the playoffs? No. Do I think they're going to get to 500? That would be asking a lot, but I think that's a goal that they can at least try to get to. I don't think they will get there either, but I think the Marlins are better is my point. I think they added the pitching. They got Jose Fernandez for a full season, hopefully. Again, if he goes down, well, then all of a sudden the Marlins probably do collapse. But I still think the Marlins are better than they were last season, and at least they'll be more competitive. And when you make the playoffs because you dominated your division, you win two or three or four less games against the Marlins. I think the Phillies, again, are horrible. I agree. They might be the worst team in all baseball. They probably are. But they won 63 games last year. They got to be better than that. Or maybe not. But, again, you lose two or three more games to the Marlins, you lose two or three more games to the Phillies, all of a sudden, instead of winning 90 games, you've won 84 games and you missed the playoffs. To me, there's not a loom. And I think the Nationals got better. So there's a chance that the Nationals didn't get better, but I would have to think they perform better than all the things that went wrong. So it's that close. Then again, I they probably will beat the Pirates at least once this season. If I am correct in my memory and they didn't beat the Cubs at all last year, the Mets will probably beat the Cubs once. I know that there are two or three of those teams out there division where they were winless, and that's a surprise as well. So we'll see how it goes. But the NL East will be interesting, and again, that rotation will be good. And Zach Wheeler comes back at the middle of the season. So again, they get better eventually. And they're always interesting. I mean, Matt Harvey's a must-see. And Bartolo Colon, anytime he bats, you've got to watch, right? I mean, they should have the Bartolo bat cam so that we can watch that. So the Mets are definitely a team that is now at least relevant, to say the least. But I'm actually working on an article now. I think there's going to be regression there. And I haven't looked at it closely enough yet, but I actually think the Mets will miss the playoffs. I think that's going to be my prediction, but I've got to look at it closer because, again, I haven't actually gotten all the way to the end of what I think and what I'm going to write here. But that's coming up here in the not-too-distant future over at minorleagueball.com. Let me ask you about spring training. Obviously, we're going on here. We're getting closer to the end. But does it matter to you? Is there anything in spring training that means anything? And if so, what and how meaningful is it for you?
Well, just like in football, I mean, I want to watch the injured players, see how they're performing. I don't care about stats all that much. You know, all these things you hear about players, their ERAs are up here. The top-notch players, I don't care. You know, they'll be fine. I'm not worried about Jacob DeGrom, who's a velocity down two or three miles an hour. It's spring training. They're not, you know, the adrenaline's not there yet. They're not gearing up yet. I am concerned about someone like Jeff Samardzija, who got wrecked last year and now getting wrecked again. You know, and I don't understand why, because everything looks normal. There's no injury there. He's still throwing hard, but he's getting wrecked. So, yes, that would concern me, stuff like that. David Wright, someone who, you know, we know with the spinal stenosis, you want to see how he's playing. He just started now. Doesn't, you know, he's going to be a very tough person to come to draft, because the Mets have already come out and said, hey, he's going to get one day off a week, minimum. That's, you know, now he's talking 136 days he's going to play. If he doesn't end up on the disabled list at some point, most people believe he will. So what's the overrun now, 110 games? You know, I don't, I'm not so sure how you can draft him. So, you know, that's the injured players I want to look at, certain pitchers I want to look at, guys coming back up, injury I want to look at. But overall, Chris, it's just to get, you know, back into the flow of the game, stuff like that. You play this with little details. Prospects, you want to see, especially at this time of year, are they still with the Major League Ball Club? That means there's a chance they could make stay with the club. You know, that's important. The guys you can draft late. Once again, we see it every year in baseball. You're going to get some guys who, I don't want to say you've never heard of. You and I obviously have heard of them, but those who maybe have heard of them, they have 444 in spring training, they have six home runs. They're going to make the club. You know, those are the guys, yes, you want to draft, you know, in your leagues. Not too early, but you pick them. And then as soon as the hot streak stops, which may be late April, early May, you move on. Now you take what they can get from you early on, but then you have to be willing to move on, because they're not going to plod through this all season long, not unless they're a top prospect. So that's what I use spring training for. For the veterans, for the most part, I don't really care.
Yeah, I don't care that much. I haven't even paid a lot of attention to spring training. I haven't watched a lot of it. Unfortunately, the Red Sox aren't even on every time they play here, which shocks me. I don't know. The Red Sox have a network here. I don't know why. And they do this every single year up here. I mean, are the Yankees on every single day there that they play? Are the Mets on every single day? Because the Red Sox aren't. On their main network, I don't know how often they show the Red Sox games, but I know that it's not every single night. I know it's not every single day. I'm not even sure if it's 3 or 4 days a week. I don't know why that is, but is that the case with the Mets and the Yankees, or can you watch them every single day in spring training?
No, I believe the S Network televises 10 spring training games. I don't know what SNY does. I imagine around the same. Never really understood that. You know, the Yankees and Mets, I mean, that's what the S Network is, the Yankees Network. SNY is the Mets Network. Why would you televise at least all the home spring training games? You know, you think, what other program do you have in the middle of the afternoon on a weekday? There's kind of anything else out there. So that's always surprised me somewhat. But then again, I mean, you mentioned it. You haven't watched much. I love baseball. I mean, if the game was on, sure, I'd have it on TV, but I wouldn't be totally paying attention. It's spring training. You know, after an inning or two, especially early on, everybody leaves the game, all the veterans leave. Yeah, it doesn't matter anymore. So I can understand that. But I remember thinking last night, Yankees and the Mets played last night, which is, you know, it's spring training, it doesn't matter, but it's bigger than normal down here. And yet, the game wasn't televised. And I found that shocking. You know, SNY, like I said, I imagine they cover about 10 games. I know the ESPN Network covers 10 games, yet neither one decided that covering the Yankee-Mets spring training game, maybe the only spring training game that anybody would really care about in New York, and they don't televise it. I found that surprising. But no, you can't watch every game. And the MLB Network, they televise, three, four games a day. So, you know, just leave that channel on. You get to see the baseball.
Yeah, you can definitely find baseball. But like you said, and I don't know if it's because the parks can only do so much. I don't know why there would be any contracts that would want to limit the access to these games. So I can't really think of a reason, a very good reason, why every single game wouldn't be televised, at least like in the Boston and the – I mean, those places have their own networks. If it's the if it's the Royals and they don't spend a lot of money and they don't have a huge TV contract, something like that, I suppose – or one of the, a Milwaukee or something. I suppose I can understand why those wouldn't televise every single game. But the Red Sox are the number one team in Boston. I realize that the Patriots keep winning. But at its heart, Boston is a baseball town. And so we talk about baseball every day. And I would think that the NESN and the local networks would get at least some audience. Better than, the fishing show that they run it in prime time or something like that. They did a dating show last year during the season. I mean, some of the local programming on these local networks, I don't know how YES does it, but on NESN anyway, is pretty mediocre to outright bad. So I can't imagine that that would be more popular than a Red Sox game, even on replay. And they can do it fast, too. They do like a Sox in 90 during the season, where they do the normal game, obviously, full length, and then in the middle of the afternoon or at midnight or 3 a.m., they'll do the Sox in 90, where they cut it down quick. I mean, they could do that. I mean, it strikes me as a little bit strange. Looking into this season, you follow the entire league. You cover it for fantasy sports, and you obviously follow it as a baseball fan. Coming into this season, who are some of the players that you're really watching? I realize it's a big league and a lot of players, but who are the guys that really have your eye that you're saying, you know what, this is the guy that I'm going to look for. This is one of the more interesting situations that I'm going to be kind of checking in on from time to time. Who are those stories, either for good or for bad, this year?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind is Bryce Harper ready to be a consistent MVP candidate each and every year? That's the first thing that comes to mind to me. And I know Mike Trout's great, I know Goldschmidt's great. I want to know, can Bryce Harper do it, you know, game in, game out, year after year? And also, situation with Pat LeBlanc trying to choke him last year. So I always find that interesting. You know, I certainly find that extremely interesting what's going to go on there in Washington. That's one of the problems I have with Washington. I'm not so sure about the clubhouse chemistry there, where I'm going to be picking them to make the playoffs. I think they're a very good team, but why haven't they done more damage? How did they miss the playoffs last year? You know, I don't know if Dusty Baker's the answer there either. You know, he's had a lot of problems managing as well, maybe not with personalities, but more with how he handles things. So that's an interesting situation to me. I think of a team, how about the Blue Jays? I mean, this is a team that we know they can rake. We absolutely know they can rake. Donaldson, Bautista, Encarnacion, assuming they're all three healthy, they're going to rake. How does the pitching staff hold up? Can Marcus Stroman be that ace? You know, he is going to be the opening day starter there. Can he be that ace? And they need that badly. You know, so I said, I find that incredibly interesting to see what's going to happen with the Blue Jays there. And he's still going to be American League East, the Red Sox. Another team I know they can hit. What about the pitching staff? You know, David Price, I think he'll be very good. Great. But what about everybody else? You know, Eduardo Rodriguez, a guy we've been sort of waiting now to become a top-notch starter, already probably going to miss most of April now with a knee injury. You know, does he develop? Do the Sox go out and make a big deal to go out and get, you know, I mentioned on yesterday's show, go out and get a Sonny Gray. You know, they really say they're not trading Sonny Gray, but can the Red Sox have more than enough minor league talent to really go out and get any ace they want that's available? You know, and do they go out and make that deal? You know, do they have to make it earlier? Because let's say, hey, Red Sox are playing well, but Tom's playing really well, and the Red Sox don't want to fall too far behind. Because maybe they can't wait till the July 31st deadline. Maybe they have to go make it in June. So that's the other thing I wonder about. You know, the Yankees, how old they are. Is this the end for them? You know, Teixeira, A-Rod, Sabathia. Will the Yankees put Sabathia in the pen? I find that hard to believe. He should be in the pen, but I find it hard to believe. The Dodgers. I mean, for a team that had a gazillion dollars to spend, why are we just not happy with this team? It's really Kershaw. You lose Greinke, which is really silly. It's just silly. You lost him over a year, and you don't want to put next year on the contract. It's just silly. I mean, you know, this team just doesn't excite you for all the money they have. You know, Jock Peterson, what happened to him last year when August, September, he was horrific. He really was just providing free air conditioning for everybody. So that concerns me. Carlos Correa, is he ready to be that superstar? Another player we talked about yesterday. I have some doubts, not major doubts, but some doubts that he's going to be that next great player. Yeah, and I mentioned earlier on this show, Kansas City Royals. You know, can they make a 3-straight World Series with a rotation that impresses nobody? Absolutely nobody. They're really redefining what we think about in baseball. You know, you think, oh, starting rotation, that's what gets you to the playoffs, that's what gets you to the World Series. Well, the Royals are doing it backwards. When I say an average rotation, I think that's pretty nice, but a great bullpen. But they was part of that bullpen with Greg Holland. You know, okay, now it's really Kelvin Herrera, Joaquin Soria, and Wade Davis. Is that good enough? You know, Eric Hosmer, Lorenzo Cain, are they ready to take that next step to be a great player? Alex Gordon, who's been taking a step back, can he pick it up? Moustakas, who's been up and down. So those are my big storylines. And the last one, will the Giants keep up this odd, even year craziness? I don't believe this whatsoever, but, for the Giants seems to be working out for them. And, you know, they loaded for bear this year. You know, they got that pitching staff should be very good. As soon as Marsh can figure out what his problem is. So I wonder if the Giants are going to be, once again, be that threat now that we're in an even year.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're in an advanced metrics age, and essentially what Moneyball was all about, the book Moneyball, the movie, for those who haven't read the book, people think it's about being cheap or playing or just plain not swinging and walking a lot. But really, the essence of what Moneyball was about was trying to find inefficiencies in the analysis of games, of teams, of players, and taking advantage of essentially finding value. And this is kind of a fantasy thing, too. What stat or what thing do players do, or what part of their profile do they have that is undervalued? And then getting as much of that as you can because it's affordable. And so for low-budget teams, being able to find it. That's what Moneyball was about. And I'm wondering about what is there in that kind of – and that's how we came across on-base percentage and why walks were so important and things like that. Now we're getting a lot more advanced than that. But this could be the next – kind of a little bit different Moneyball, which is that's my question for you is, like you said, it used to be a starting rotation. I think in the playoffs that's the case. If you don't have at least two really good pitchers, I think it's very difficult to win. And that's what's amazing about what the Royals did. Like you said, they did trade for Cueto, but he wasn't a great pitcher when it came to matter, and yet they still won the World Series. But we used to come to think that you needed at least two, three good pitchers to make it to the World Series, and then to win it you need at least two. Obviously, the Royals have done it mostly backwards to forwards, which was they did it with the bullpen, and they just managed to get there. Get to the bullpen so we can win. That's a weird thing to do, but that's what the Royals have done. And I'm of the belief, and I don't have the research, and I want to find it, and I'm not the best researcher in the world, but I do think we're going to see a lot more pitchers only go through the lineup two or at most three times. There's some pretty convincing data that I've heard about that I haven't actually seen, saying that if you try to go through either a third time or a fourth time through the lineup, pitchers are significantly worse. And, of course, that makes perfect sense. But usually we want – you hear analysis or analysts say, you got to go at least six. We need our pitchers to go deeper. We need them to go deeper. I think the trend coming is that the great pitchers are still going to go deep, but the mediocre to the bad ones are going to go much shorter. Three innings, four innings. And we talk about like a Dellin Betances. It'd be great if he could go two innings every outing, expand his impact when he's in there. We don't see a lot of relievers go more than an inning, but we don't see a lot of starters where they want to go less. I think we're going to get to that. I think we're going to see more two-inning relievers, and we're going to see more four-inning outings for some of these mediocre starters. And I'm wondering, do you think this is a trend? Do you think this is a fluke? Do you think this is a snapshot that's going to change? Or has baseball changed now where the bullpen is the thing? Everyone's trading for or paying big money for these late-inning relievers in order to cover up some of their weaknesses and inefficiencies in the starting rotation. Do you think this is a trend that's going to continue going forward into the future? Or do you think this is just a snapshot in time that we're seeing right now, but eventually it'll fizzle out and we'll go back to what we're used to, which is six or seven innings and then a closer and so forth?
Well, I think you're seeing a combination of the both. And I think the reason is this. Small market teams, they can't go out and sign David Price at $200 million. You know, they can't do that. So they have to make do with the Ian Kennedys of the world, you know, and, you know, tier four starting pitchers. So they need to find a different way to win. And for them to win is, you know, let's get that starting pitcher out of there after five, six innings. You know, as you mentioned, avoid him facing the law, turning over the line three, four times with it. We know they're going to get hit. And what we can afford is bullpen. You know, you can afford some good bullpen pieces. I think you're going to see a lot of teams do what the Yankees did last year. And that is, you're going to have a – it doesn't matter who makes the club at a spring training. Outside of, like, players like Betances, Miller, and Chapman, everybody else is going to be on a revolving door between AAA and Major League Baseball. You know, you use Brandon Pinnock 2 days in a row, send him down, get somebody else up here. Keep doing that over and over again. You know, only your guys who are locked stay in the bullpen. Everybody else can just go on the shuttle. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you get the guy who's ready to pitch that day, who can help you out that day, give you some length that day. You know, in some ways you're playing with a 22-man roster, and that last three spots you're just rotating whoever you think gives you the best chance to win that day. The Yankees did that quite a bit last year. They were successful doing it. I think you'll see that being done more and more as well. Now, once again, it may be more by the primarily of the top money clubs because, you know, anyway, look at it. It does cost money to keep doing this, to keep putting people on the roster, off the roster. And like I said, I'm not talking top prospects here. We have to start their clock early. Not talking that. Don't let guys have options. You're not worried about, in some ways, you're not worried about keeping them healthy either. It's helping the ball club now, doing what you have to do now. So I do agree with you. I think more clubs are going to go with that philosophy of let's not push these pitchers. You know, that's how they get hurt anyway. You know, if they're mediocre pitchers, and if they only go 4 or 5 innings, I'm not worried about getting anything so they can get a win. If 4 or 5 innings is what the stats tell us, the advanced stats tell us, that's what they're going to be effective going, then let's get them out of there. Go to the bullpen. That's going to be a hard thing to do, though, because your relievers are going to get taxed, which is why they have to do what the Yankees did. Once again, you put people out, they can't pitch that week. Or, you know, they put 3 innings on Wednesday, set them down. They really can't help us till Sunday anyway. You know, set them down, get somebody else in there. So I think you'll see a combination of both, Chris. Mainly because, like I said, these small market clubs cannot afford to pay the David Price of the world $217 million. So they have to find a different way to win.
And from a development perspective and from a cost perspective, I could see why it makes a lot of fiscal sense and just a lot of just pure common sense that the bullpens would be the key, that maybe you'd have 4 or 5 dominant. I mean, there's more velocity in baseball now than ever before. More guys are throwing 95-plus, more guys are throwing 100-plus than we've ever seen before. And from following minor league prospects, one thing that I know is one of the keys to trying to predict who's going to be a good fantasy player or who's not is determining who's going to be a starting pitcher and who's going to be a reliever. There are a lot of really good pitchers in the minor leagues that just can't develop a third pitch or even can't develop a great second pitch. And so, therefore, they're just relievers. And in fantasy purposes, we just don't care about relievers for the most part. But for baseball purposes, if you've got a guy that throws 98 with just a mediocre secondary pitch, he can throw one inning and dominate for one inning. But there are also a lot of pitchers in the minor leagues who have 2 really good pitches, but they don't have a third. And therefore, if you don't have a third pitch, you're not a 1 or a 2. You're a 3 at best, and depending on what that second pitch is. But more than likely, you're a number 4 or a number 5, which is nice. But again, that's not – those guys come and go, and they kind of shuttle back and forth between AAA and the majors as well. And you don't win – you win, I guess, with respectable 4s and 5s, but 4s and 5s don't win you know, titles. I can see how you would it would make sense from a cost perspective to just have and say, look, oh, this guy's got a dominant slider and good velocity. He's going to be a good 7th-inning guy. Boom. You develop him that way in the minors. Now, it's unfortunate for that guy because it'd be nice if he could develop that third pitch and become a starter. But if you want to be the Royals and just continue to move minor leaguers up into the majors so that you can compete, having 4 or 5 97-mile-per-hour relievers with just a decent secondary pitch, it's cost-effective, and it's also just effective on the field. And so I can see why that would be a trend rather than just a fluke. I could see how that would be the future. That being said, it's a tough decision because, like I said, if you throw 97 with a filthy slider, it'd be nice if you could just develop that third pitch and all of a sudden you're a number 2 starter, which don't grow on trees either. So there would be that. And then also, I like to read Keith Law, and I don't agree with him all the time. I often disagree with him, to be honest. But one point he always makes, and A, by the way, if you want to go out and sign relievers, they're cheaper too. I realize that Andrew Miller got a lot of money to be a closer for the Yankees, and I realize that Darren O'Day, for example, this year, really struck gold with the Orioles. But still, paying Andrew Miller $55 million is a lot safer investment than paying David Price $210. But the point that Keith Law makes is that relievers are so unpredictable. One year they're great, the next year they're horrible or mediocre or something like that. And they do run into injuries as well because being a reliever is a physically taxing situation, the way they get up and down. And some managers literally run their elbows into the ground like a Joe Torre won all those Super Bowls, all those World Series. But he killed his fair share of elbows in there. And they talk about, I think, Dusty Baker does that as well. But they are cheaper. But Keith Law makes the argument they're unreliable. But you look at what the Cardinals have been doing over the last few years, and they didn't get a lot of credit for it because it wasn't the focus of their team. And they didn't have that the dominant Royals end back end that people think of. But the Cardinals have had a ton of velocity in their bullpen for years now. It seems like they were kind of doing it before anybody else, before the Royals got credit for it. It seems to me that there's a lot of reason to think that this could be the future. But like Keith Law said, if it's unpredictable, that makes it unsustainable too.
Yeah, I mean, Keith Law is not going to be breaking news there. It's always been known that relievers are so raw. You know, from 1 year to the next, you really don't know what you're going to get, especially with the guys who aren't top tier. You know, your closers you pretty much do know, but everybody else you don't. I mean, there's a reason why, and I made the point of yesterday, when it comes to closing, when you come to directing a closer, you know, there are 30 closers. By July 1st, half of them are gone. You know, they're either hurt or they just don't have it or whatever it is. And for a lot of reasons you already mentioned, They go, they get year after year they go, you know, they open the bullpen up, but they're not brought in. They get hot, but sit back down. You know, they may do that three times in a game sometimes. That's not healthy. It's just not. And that's part of the reason why they have problems. Starters, you know, hey, they may throw more pitches, but they know when they're getting in a game. You know, you're starting on Friday, so you prepare for that. You know, for relievers, you don't know. You know, certain days you're told, okay, you're not pitching today. You know, you pitch 2 days in a row, 3 days in a row, you're not pitching today, whatever it might be. So they do know. But other times, you know, they'll get up, down, up, down, up, down, and that leads to other problems. Some years they're fresh, some years they're not. It really is that simple to me. It's that's why a lot of teams now look at it. Like I said, unless you're top tier, the rest of the guys are disposable. And that's what the Yankees were showing last year. These guys, you know, outside of the Batonis, Millers, and now Chapman, everybody else disposable. You know, if it's not working, move them out, get somebody else who can pitch that day. Somebody that's going to help us to win that day. I think you're going to see more and more of that. Just because I don't think Mansfield have to learn, yeah, you need an advantage somewhere. You know, maybe in some ways the loyalty, you're not being loyal to the guy. Yeah, you pitch well for me on Monday and Tuesday, but now I can't use it for the rest of the week. You're back down in Scranton. You know, I think that's what's going on there. And I think that could work somewhat, especially if you don't have anywhere near close to what the Mets have. You know, the Mets have a dominant staff. They won't have this problem. Most of their stars can go 6-7 innings on almost a daily basis. The Yankees are the exact opposite. I mean, you look at the Yankee staff, they usually pray for anyone to go 6 innings. 6 innings would be a great start for a Yankees. Severino, too young. You know, he's not going to go. Tanaka, you have no idea what he can give you, and everybody else, a complete guess. Eovaldi, Nova, Sabathia, you'd be lucky to give you 3 innings. So, you know, that's why the Yankees went with that, because they knew their stars couldn't give them length. Certain teams don't have that problem. The Royals, they started this, you know, a couple of years back when they knew, hey, we have average stars. We know they're not giving us length. We have to find a way to win. And they did. And, you know, listen, baseball is a copycat league. Like anybody else, teams are going to see what, oh, wow, that's how the Royals were successful. We know they're not a great team, but, hey, they win because this is what they do. Other teams are going to copy that and see if they can get it to work for them.
Yeah, I do. I'm curious to see if, and I believe this trend might come, that we're going to see starters going 3 or 4 innings. Again, not the David Prices. They're always going to be paid the big money to go 7 or 8. But I do think that they're going to, instead of pitch counts of 100, we're going to see pitch counts of 65 or 70. And like we said, the third or fourth time through the lineup, they're just not going to let them do it. Even if a pitcher looks good, some teams are just going to stick to it and they're not going to do it. And I think we're going to see that. But I don't know. Again, that would be definitely, you know, you hear some people, I think John Smoltz said it on MLB Network, that he thinks they need to go to 4-man rotations. If they do what I'm suggesting here, it's more like a 6 or 7-man rotation if you've got a starter going, if you've got one or two starters going 4 innings every single time out. So we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting to see, but I think that's something we'll see a lot more often. And I'm wondering if it will be a trend or not. I'm very curious to see that. I'm trying to put together the article, but it takes some research to find that kind of data. It's not like, as far as I know, that kind of data isn't on ESPN. So I'll have to find someone who did the work that can provide that. And anyone who can has good research sites, by all means, please contact me on Twitter, @CJMitch73. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell, here on a podcast to be named later. We're talking baseball with George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com, as well as the SiriusXM radio host. You can follow him on Twitter as well. It's @GeorgeKurtz. Or if you want to talk baseball with us, we'd be more than happy to do it online in the long form over on Facebook, a podcast to be named later. Just join the group and make your suggestions, and we'd be more than happy to talk about it. George, let's look a little bit from division real quickly. You covered a lot of the AL East, so we'll skip by that. We'll consider that covered. But looking at the AL Central, just real quick, we're not going to go team to team, but what are the stories of the AL Central? What's the horse race? Who are the key players? Who's going to be good and who's going to be bad, and those kinds of things. If you're just going to look at AL Central, you're going to put a little synopsis together. What do you think of the stories of the AL Central?
Well, for me, the number one story is that the Detroit Tigers, I think, we're sort of overlooking them this year. You know, that they fixed the bullpen, or at least the bullpen's doing near as bad as it used to be. I'm not a big K-Rod believer anymore, and he will have some hiccups, but he at least stabilized the closing position. They got Justin Wilson from the Yankees. That helps out their bullpen. It was always their bugaboo. We know they can hit. You know, Cabrera and Victor Martinez can stay healthy. I guess now Justin Upton is banged up. This team's going to rake. You know, so they're fixing the rotation, getting sand. They have a lot of older guys injured. They've got some injury worries here. But I like what they've done. I think they're going to be a threat once again. Are the Twins ready to make that next step? You know, we know they have a lot of interesting, good young players from Minnesota. You know, is Miguel Sano ready to be that superstar? You know, Byung-Ho Park, can he be a consistent major league hitter? Can Joe Mauer rebound? Those will be fine. You know, I think this is a team that could be a threat. But the rotation, ugh, I mean, you're going to have to promote some of these young guys. I mean, when is Jose Barrios going to be ready to make that, you know, make a difference? You know, I wonder about that when he gets called up there. I think he could help that team almost immediately. I just don't think this will be Minnesota's year. I think they're close, but not quite there yet. Byron Buxton would be nice if he woke up, too, and smelled the coffee. The White Sox, I mean, you already touched on the LaRoche thing earlier. That's a clubhouse that seems to be a mess now, so I really can't see them doing much damage this year. Cleveland loved the rotation, and now they're leaving Brantley back. It looks like Brantley may be back for opening day, which is certainly a bonus. But even if he's not, now instead of the end of April, early May, what's he going to miss, a week? You know, good news there. Actually, yeah, I love the rotation there. Carrasco, that you and I are both high on, I think he's going to be very good. Kluber, good. Salazar, Bauer, and, Josh Tomlin, or is your fifth starter? That's a rotation to be dealt with. And they can hit. And they get some consistent hitting. That Cleveland's going to be dangerous there. But I think it's an interesting division. I think KC, Detroit, Cleveland are really three teams to watch. But Minnesota, like, as I said, they know we're patchy. They're getting better as well. I think the White Sox will bring up the rear.
Yeah, that's a little unfortunate. I'm not a White Sox fan by any means. Matter of fact, if anything, I have reason to dislike them because they knocked my Red Sox out of the playoffs a few years, well, more than a few years back now. I'm getting old, jeez. But I liked what they did last year in the offseason. Not this offseason, but the one before. I liked that they added LaRoche, even though I think he's kind of been a jerk when it comes to this situation. But they traded for Todd Frazier, which I thought was a steal. And I like their pitching staff. Chris Sale, obviously dominant. I've always been a Jose Quintana fan. I've always thought he was underrated. In general, I like that White Sox team, but it does seem like it's a mess, sort of like the Nationals last year with their clubhouse. When you've got all this upheaval and all this kind of controversy and just negative energy, if you want to get into the zen of it all this negativity around that club, it is tough for a team to have a dominant season when there's all this negativity. Now, people point out, you know, I remember the Red Sox rumors of 31 ball players and 31 Cavs or something, or the Yankees, where they all hated each other, but yet they dominated on the field. Things couldn't have been as bad as maybe they look back on if they were able to play as well as they did during all those controversies. Whenever you see it overflowing the clubhouse and into the media, to me that means that it's boiled over and that a lot more is going on there than just a clubhouse's, the typical clubhouse chemistry problems. And so I do. I rightfully agree with you that the White Sox are a concern. But on the field, again, I like them. I really think they could be a difference in this division. I think the Twins have a lot to go. I don't think that they're a true contender. I'm shocked they won 83 games. Every time I look at the standings and I see they won 83 games last year, I don't know how they do it. Because like you said, their pitching is mediocre on its best days. And the offense is mediocre decent. I don't mind Brian Dozier. And obviously, Sano's a guy who we'll see. Let me ask you real quickly about Miguel Sano. We did our draft last night for what Mike Wars, and he was projected by ESPN, and this kind of floored me. He hit 38 homers. Now, I don't know if Sano technically or officially is a rookie this year, but he didn't play a full season last year. He didn't even play a half a season last year that I'm aware of. So essentially, this is his first full season, and because he didn't, in my opinion, didn't play enough games last year for me to count it, I consider this really his first season, whether he's officially a rookie or not. And I would never predict a player in his first season or even his first full season to hit 30 home runs, even if it's Joey Gallo or even if it's Babe Ruth. That's a lot of home runs in a day where most guys don't hit over 30. Does that make sense to you? Miguel Sano predicted to hit 38 home runs by ESPN. Does that even seem remotely close? I'd be happy with 25. I'd be stunned by 35, and they've got him at 38.
I mean, it's certainly a possibility. He's not a rookie by baseball fans. He had 335 plate appearances, so he's not even close to a rookie. So pretty much about a half a season's worth. Power is what he does. He's a natural hitter. So I have him for a low 30s. I think 38, 39. Okay, I don't know. Certainly can't go to 40. But I have him for a low 30s home run. That's what he is. He's going to hit the power. Ball seems to travel much better to left field, to target field, than it does to right. So I'm not really all that worried about Sano.
No, I'm not worried. I just thought that that was an extremely aggressive number for such a young player. I mean, Chris Bryant hit, what, 28 last year, 27? And granted, Sano had a lot more bats last year than Bryant did before last year. So it's not like Sano's a brand new, fresh guy to the majors. Like you said, he's had a pretty sizable amount of at-bats already. But again, to me, I know Sano. I've followed him for quite some time. I've owned him in Dynasty Leagues. I've written about him quite a bit for my different articles for Roto Experts and even for Baseball America. But to me, that's aggressive. I mean, are there even 15 players in the entire league that you expect to hit over 35 homers, and a guy so young, so new to the league? I mean, Bryce Harper had his first season with over 35 last year, and they got Sano with that, you know, in his first full season. To me, that was a surprise. That's all. I'm not worried about him. He's going to hit home runs, no doubt about it. It just seemed like 38 was extremely aggressive.
Yeah, I can't argue with you there. 38 to me would be aggressive. I said 15 guys. I don't know if there'll be 10 guys hit 35 home runs, maybe even less than that. Power is just in such short supply in Major League Baseball in today's game. I said 38, 40 home runs. To me, yeah, that's a reach. That'd be a fantastic season. You know, talking about close to an MVP season. So I have the low 30s. I think he will hit that. Good. Yeah, I said that ballpark is not as much a pitcher's park, especially the left field, as we thought it might be. The ball does seem to fly out of there. But as I keep coming back to, hitting home runs is what he does. Sort of reminds me of Adam Dunn, but a little bit better hitter than Adam Dunn. It's just what he does. The ball's going to fly off his bat. I don't know if the average will be there, but the home runs will be.
If you had to pick one player that is going to be the biggest surprise in the NL Central, both for the positive and the negative, give me one of each. Who's the guy that's going to be surprisingly disappointing or regress significantly? Who's a player that's going to have a much better season than you thought? If you had to predict now, so that I can pin you down later on in the season when we're doing our 2016 review show as the season comes to an end. Give me one player on each, the good and the bad.
In the National League, you said one player that's going to have a good season, one player that's going to have a bad season that we're not expecting. Okay, so here at Cheat Sheets here. And then actually, my good is going to be, I don't know if anybody I think is going to be very good tonight. I'm looking really down, far down the list here. I'm not big on Yasiel Puig at all. He's somebody I want really very little to do with here. He just worries me. He just worries me that his head's not on straight, and that he's maybe not going to be that player we thought he was, that sort of thing. Two players I'm very, very much high on are, I think two guys we discussed yesterday, Piscotty on St. Louis, Conforto on the Mets. I think these guys are pure natural hitters. They're not Miguel Sano types as far as the home runs. They're hitters. I think they can hit the average, hit for 20 home run power. I think they're baseball players. That's what they remind me of. So the Mets, I'm really hoping the Mets don't pigeonhole Conforto to a platoon player right now, which you're hearing about. Oh, they want to platoon him with this guy, the Hazard up in the outfield or whatever. I think that makes no sense. This guy is a good young hitter. They got a gift from God when they were able to draft him. The team stayed away because of who his agent was or whatever it was. You know, they got a gift there. They got one of the best hitters here. Let the kid play. Those are two guys I'm very high on, both for fantasy and off the Major League. I think these kids will be a good player. It's Piscotty and Conforto. Another guy who I'm a little worried about would be Jake Arrieta. You know, and you said it yesterday. You answered pretty perfectly. Had one good half year. It was fantastic. He had one great half season. But, you know, can he do it again? I'm not so sure. So he'd be one guy that I'm worried about.
Let me ask you about Yenis Cespedes with the Mets. I think they got a great deal. They held out and they held out and they held out, and eventually they got him. And they may lose him after 1 year. He got an opt-out. So essentially, Cespedes got the comfort of a 3-year deal at pretty good money if he wants it. But he also can opt out and go for the big-time deal if it comes about after the season. So I can understand why both sides did it. But any deal on a 1-year situation to me is a good deal for anybody. But the Mets are going to play him mostly in center field, especially if Conforto doesn't get platooned or have splits. If Conforto plays every single day, he's their left fielder, which means Cespedes has to be their center fielder. Now, with that great deal, again, I'm all on board. I would have never said the Mets shouldn't have done it. I think it's a good deal for them. No doubt about it, I like that they signed Cespedes if I'm a Mets fan. But now there are expectations. And Cespedes has always been good, but the on-base percentage has always been, for a guy of his money, bad. I mean, he's like a .308 career on-base percentage guy, which is pretty low for a guy who hits home runs. But when people talk about him, they say, all right, he carried the A's. He really helped the Tigers a little bit, and then he obviously carried the Mets, at least in August and a little bit of September. but he's never really done it on a full-time season as far as dominance. And he's got to play center field. Do you think Cespedes can play center field every single day? And is there any way possible that he can kind of live up to the expectation? Because now that they got him, because he was so dominant for that just stretch, he was bad in the playoffs, he cooled off in September, but the expectations are really high, and I've just never seen Cespedes as a guy who could play center field full-time. One of the rumors in Boston why they traded him after they had traded for him was that the Red Sox wanted to move to right field, and he refused. Now, I don't know if that's true. That's the rumor. That's the scuttlebutt, and who knows if that's the Red Sox trying to spit a little bit of negativity on somebody because they traded him away. The Red Sox do that. So that could be the case. They could be trying to dirty Cespedes and kind of blame him for things. That's very possible. But nonetheless, can he live up expectations, and can he have the kind of season that Mets fans are going to? Because the Mets should be better offensively than last year, but last year they were really bad for the most part on offense. There's a lot of expectations on him, and I'm concerned he can't play center field. What are your thoughts there?
Well, if I'm worried about one big downfall from the Mets, it's defense. I mean, it's definitely defense. And Cespedes is the number one problem. He's not a center fielder. They're kidding themselves. You know, and it makes me even angrier to think, and once again, you said it, that one of the reasons they think about platooning Conforto is you're going to get Cespedes out of center field. So you're going to bench one of your better players? I mean, what kind of management is this? What kind of roster construction is this? So that annoys me. No, he's not a center fielder. He's got a rocket for him. I've always seen in the playoffs. He booted ball after ball out there. Hey, of course, you're a game. I mean, it's silly to me. You got the shortstop Cabrera, who's pretty much Derek Jeter. He'll field anything that's hit to him, but he has no more range. That's it. So I know there are strikeouts there, and maybe it doesn't matter as much. And that'll certainly help. You know, you got Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard. You know, they're going to strike out more than their share of batters. But still, you know, having, Cespedes in center, Cabrera in short, even right at third is no longer a plus defender. Lucas Duda at first, not a plus defender. It could be a problem. And if there's one downfall for the Mets, I think this is it. Besides the fact that they're not the greatest hitting team, average at best, their defense is way below average in my mind. I mean, really, do they have a plus defender anywhere? Who's a plus defender on the Mets? Anyone?
No, I don't think so. I mean, D'Arnaud, a catcher, is adequate, but not plus. Neil Walker at second base, I think, is fine, but again, not plus. Duda, is he at first base? Maybe he's okay, but no, he's not. He's not Adrian Gonzalez over there. It's not a strong offense, a defense team, which is weird, because if you lack offense, usually you make up for it in pitching and defense. Now, obviously, the Mets have the pitching, but they don't have the third ingredient, which is the defense. It's strange. I'm wondering how that – I mean, you talked about it in fantasy terms the other day. A lot of good matchups for facing the Marlins in that park, facing the Braves, who aren't very good, looking at the Phillies' offense. There's a lot of easy outs and strikeouts for that Mets rotation as far as fantasy purposes go. I'm wondering, though, I guess the defense isn't enough of a concern to stay away from the DeGroms and the Syndergaards, right? But it is a concern for the baseball team. Fantasy-wise, you don't really care. It's not enough of an impact to maybe change your opinion there, whether it be ERA or WHIP or anything. But you do think it could possibly be a downfall when it comes to Major League Baseball and their eventual record.
I do. I mean, it's concerned me all offseason with the Mets when they keep putting negative players or players who just pass their prime at certain positions. I mean, Cabrera hasn't played shortstop in a couple of years. There's a reason why. For the Mets to think, he's going to play short. I know he's maybe for the Mets fans, and some of the Mets fans pointed out to me, well, it'll be better than Wilmer Flores. Okay, I get that. The Flores was bad, too. You know, and I understand that. But still, he's not a major league shortstop anymore. I said that. I think the perfect comparison is Derek Jeter. Any ball hit to him, yes, that's an out. You'll have no problem with that. But going to his left, going to his right, and that will drive Mets fans nuts. If you know baseball, that will drive you nuts after a while, and you realize balls that probably should be out are getting through to the outfield. You know, Cespedes is going to turn singles into doubles, and outs into singles. That's going to be an issue. You know, yes, he has a rocket front arm. I'm just so surprised, and maybe what you said is correct, that Granton is not playing center field. I got to think he'd be better at center field than Cespedes. Not great, but better, then maybe you're right. Maybe he doesn't want to go to right field. Which is unusual, because outside of center field, right field is usually considered the next best spot for an outfielder to be, where that arm can really play. But I've heard so many reasons why Cespedes has gone from team to team to team. Reichfield is one of them. I heard the other things too that maybe the Red Sox weren't throwing dirt on the grave here. Maybe there is something to it.
Looking at the NL Central, the Cardinals, again, I look at the way that 2015 finished, and I'm stunned. I don't see the Cardinals as being a 100-win team last year, and yet they won 100 games. They had a good team, don't get me wrong, but you look at them on paper, and I don't see how they got to 100 wins, and yet they do. And that's a credit to the Cardinals. They're a great organization. They churn out winning seasons year after year after year. It's not like they have a bad roster. I don't want to imply that they're a bunch, they're not the A's of Moneyball, where they had a bad roster that just exploited things and ended up with a good season. The Cardinals definitely have good players. I don't want to imply that. But they don't spend the most money. They don't have an all-star roster on paper, at least. Yet they won 100 games. It seems like people are looking back and almost doing revisionist history in projecting what they expect from them in 2006. They look at the roster and say, wow, how did they win 100 last year? I don't know how they did. So now they're going to say, you know what? Somehow they got 100 last year, but there's no way they're going to do it again. And they've got some injuries and they've got some concerns. And some people are predicting that this is the year the Cardinals collapse. And I'm wondering, do you think the Cardinals are going to collapse? And the way that I look at things, when I project teams, I look and say, all right, who's going to perform better than I expected from last year? Who's going to perform? Who last year was disappointing and therefore is going to perform better this year? Who had a career year last year, and therefore they have to regress, and maybe even a lot? And then the additions of their free agents, how is that going to impact good or bad on what they did or didn't do? And then I say, okay, this is a 5-win change, or this is a 10-win or 12-win change. And the one thing I talk about with the Red Sox is there was no way the Red Sox could make the playoffs last year with that rotation. I argued that last year, and I argue it to this day. The Red Sox won 78 games, and they added David Price. How do the Red Sox get to 90 by just adding David Price? Could that be? I suppose it could, but I still have a hard time believing that the Red Sox win the division. They're in the hunt. It makes sense that they could be, but 12 to 14 game change because they added David Price, I'm not so sure that's possible. That being said, some people think the Cardinals are going to collapse, but how do the Cardinals go from 100 wins to 80 or 75, regardless of the issues or regardless of who they added or lost? What's your read on the Cardinals? Are they going to be another competitive NL Central team? Or is this the year where finally they end up as a mediocre team? And even if they win 80 games, that's a nice season. But to go from 100 to an 80 would be considered a collapse. What's your read on the Cardinals?
Well, I don't think they're going to go to an 80-win team, but I don't think they'll be a 100-win team either. I certainly think they'll be closer to high 80s. That's pretty much where I'm going to have the Cardinals there, somewhere in that range. Once again, a lot of games against bad Brewers, bad Reds. That's certainly going to help. The National League seems to be either you have it or you don't. Either you're a good team or you're not. Not too many mediocre teams. I mean, really, the Marlins may be the only true mediocre team in this entire league. The Cardinals, I don't look at it. They're another team. They'll go out and make a move if they have to. They have interesting pieces. Is Wainwright coming back? When I say he's coming back, will he be Wainwright? After that, Jamie Garcia, okay. Waka, okay. Lee, Carl Martinez is going to be spelled very good. So there are some question marks in that rotation. The hitting, I love Carpenter. No issues there. I'm worried that the sky, I think it's going to be fine. I think Grichuk is going to hit some power. Matt Holliday, I have worries about. Colton Wong at second, fine. Can they make do a shortstop with Tejada? Pretty much a all-glove, no-hit guy. So listen, this is not a 100-win team. Anyway you look at it, this is not a 100-win team. Not for me, anyway. So I think they'll be high 80s. I think they're more competing for the wild card here than they are in the division. But I think they'll be there. I don't think they're going to, I don't want to say 80 wins is cratering, but I don't think they're going to fall below 500, no.
And that would be a collapse. And I don't necessarily think that it will happen either. But some people do. I mean, when they add who they're losing in injuries and things like that, there are some people that are speculating about something like that. Anyway, another article I'm writing for minorleagueball.com is the media creations versus the reality. And again, I go back to the Red Sox as my example. After the Red Sox signed Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez last offseason, the media thought they had the best offense in the American League, or at least one of, which they did not. They had to have a miraculous August and a really pretty good September by a bunch of nobody. Jackie Bradley played like an MVP for about 5 weeks. The Red Sox ended up as a top five offense, but it was very fluky. The beginning of the year when the games mattered, they were a bad offense. Then when the games didn't matter and they played all those young players and the season was over, they went on just a ridiculous surge and just racked up runs. And at the end of the day, they were top 10 offense. But at any one time, they were a bottom 10 or a top 10, depending on when you took your little look at it. And so, but the media thought they were going to be great. They also thought they were maybe the favorite to win the AL East, or at least a contender for it, which, again, like I said, there's no way you win 90 games with that rotation. And they didn't even have David Price last year. So, and yet, the media just didn't notice. I don't know. And I argued this with Rob Nyer. He said, look, FanGraphs predicted them to be good. Baseball Prospectus, they do all these number crunching, and they have their algorithms, and it came out that they expected the Red Sox to be a contender. And Rob Nyer said, well, so you're going to overlook the numbers and eyeball it? And essentially, that's what I said. Yes, I know I can't make a good argument for it because the numbers maybe don't make sense. But you look at that rotation, you can't win a World Series. You can't win 92 games with Clay Buchholz as your best starter. It just, you can't do it. I look at it and I say, okay, this is what the media is saying. This is the hype that's following this team. This is what I think is the reality. I want to ask you that when it comes to the Cubs, because I do think the Mets are going to regress. I think there's a lot of expectations on the Mets to win at least 90 games, maybe win 95, and maybe be the World Series favorites because of that rotation being so good. And now they get a Cespedes, and all of a sudden I think people might think that their offense is at least decent. It's a little bit better than last year, maybe, but it's not significantly better. And so I think the Mets are a team that will have a lot of expectations, but I expect to be a disappointment. I look at the Cubs. For them to win 97 games last year is amazing, because while I thought they'd be better, I didn't think they'd win 97. You know, 87, I thought, something like that. So they, instead of winning 86, 87, like would have been a reasonable season, they win 97 games, which was, what, fourth or fifth best in all baseball. And then I look at the team and say, okay, the expectations are going to be enormously high. Then they add John Lackey. They add Jason Hayward. They keep Dexter Fowler. They have all these young players with more at-bats under their belts now. I'm trying to find a reason to think that they won 97 last year, but the expectations are going to be too high and they're going to regress. And the Cubs are one team I can't find it. I can't look at them and say, yes, this is where they're going to regress. And therefore, while everyone expects them to be the World Series representative, or at least a contender for it, they're going to disappoint. And I can't find that. I can't find an argument for that. Are the Cubs one of the three or four best teams in all of baseball? Or is there something I'm missing in that the Cubs are actually going to regress a little bit?
Oh, I think it's fair to say they're one of the three or four best teams in baseball. Sure, I don't think they're a great team by any means. I know there is a great team in baseball nowadays, but they're certainly one of the best. I mean, my problem with the Cubs, if you're trying to say where could their problem be, all right, a lot of young players, you know, what if they don't develop? You know, what if Hayward is pretty much what he has been? Very good defensive player, solid hitter, but a much better baseball player than anything else, but not a difference maker. What if Chris Bryant? Sure, he's 35 home runs, but that's 220. Well, Schwarber does pretty much the same thing. You know, nobody getting on base, that sort of thing. What if Jake Arrieta gets hurt? Oh, he's not the player he was last year. Lester's not doing much this spring. You know, I think his ERA is over 5, which, once again, it's spring training. I'd say it doesn't matter, but still, if you want to point out negatives, here you go. You know, Lackey's also going to a slow start this spring. The rotation could use some help. You know, what if Pedro Stop does struggle in the bullpen? Or after Rondon does struggle in the bullpen. You know, they're far from a great team. They're just the best of what's in the National League. But, you know, I think the Cubs, when you compare the Cubs to the Mets, I think the Cubs are probably a better regular season team. But in a 7-game series, I'm going to take that Mets rotation every time. And that may be the problem for the Cubs. You know, they look great over a regular season because they have their pitching's good enough. They're going to hit their share of home runs. But in a 7-game series, good pitching beats home run hitters. And I think that's the problem for the Cubs here. Their pitching is, you know, it's good, but it's not great. Outside of Arrieta, it's not great. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think their rotation is better than a lot of teams, but I agree it's nowhere near the Mets. I agree. I mean, I think John Lackey's a pretty nice pitcher. I do still think John Lester's a good pitcher. But I think John Lester was overrated. He was overpaid. I mean, he had a couple really good seasons in Boston, and he was really good in the playoffs. But he had some pretty mediocre seasons in Boston as well. And at Fenway Park with the Green Monster in the American League East and against the DH, you expect these kinds of things from an American League pitcher. So Lester was kind of, you got to grade on a curve. So Lesher had a very good career in Boston, but he had a career year that led to that monster contract. That was a horrible contract. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But it doesn't mean that Lesher's not a good pitcher. He's just not a great one. And I think that's what you're essentially saying. And I agree with you. Arrieta might be a great pitcher. I'm wondering if it is, in fact, true that he is great or just really good. We'll find that out this year. But I think Lackey and Lester at 2 and 3, it's a solid rotation, but it's nowhere near the elite of the league, and it's nowhere near the Mets. I agree with you fully there. And the one thing about Theo Epstein, he builds a fantastic franchise. He really is a phenomenal general manager when it comes to building through the minor leagues and drafting, developing players. He does a phenomenal job with that. But he's horrible with free agents. Now, he added John Lackey. I think that was a nice sign, a veteran pitcher, a solid innings-eating guy. But Theo Epstein knows him. He's had him. So that's not really a free agent signing as much as almost an internal, you know, a keep. When you keep one of your own players, you know them better, you know what you're getting, and so therefore, you know, it's easier. Theo Epstein failed time and time and time again in Boston trying to bring free agents. Edgar Renteria, Julio Lugo, Adrian Gonzalez was mediocre in Boston. Obviously, Kyle Crawford was a gigantic bust. Theo Epstein was not good at adding free agents. And now you look, and he said he pays all that money for Jason Hayward. I just don't have a lot of confidence that Theo Epstein can do that in free agency. And I think you got to believe in the trend that the bullpen is more important now than it is. And that's the one place where the Cubs didn't do anything. The Cubs are spending money. They're obviously going for it. They had a mediocre bullpen last year. They have another media. It's like the Dodgers, like you were saying. Why wouldn't the Dodgers spend the money to keep Greinke when they're trying to go for a title? And why didn't the Cubs go out and add bullpen? If you're the Cubs, and you might be, I mean, you could argue the Cubs should be the favorite for the World Series. You could make that argument. Maybe it's not the strong one. It's definitely not the runaway obvious choice. But the Cubs could be an argument that they're the best team in the National League. If you are at least considered that good, the top five at least in the National League, if not in all baseball, how do you not add a bullpen arm somewhere, somehow? Even though it's expensive and it can be hard, it just seems like the Cubs should have prioritized that. Not over Jason Hayward, maybe, which I think was a horrendous contract, but that's another story for another day. But how did they not add a bullpen guy? And at the very least, for the season, but I mean, are they going to trade for an elite closer or something like that to go to the World Series? I mean, that's a risky philosophy. That's the one thing that I let down is, how do the Cubs in their situation now not add at least one really good bullpen guy? Because right now they don't even have an absolute closer. You could argue that Rondon could lose it. You're the closer guy. Rondon could be the first closer off out of the box of this season. That's the one thing that kind of surprised me about the Cubs. They didn't add a bullpen guy. A good enough one anyway.
Yeah, that's a no argument there. I guess, I don't want to always rank general manager. They didn't add this, they didn't add that. Maybe it wasn't out there. You know, they're worried about things, and, bullpen goes away. So I'm not going to rank Theo for that. Maybe they have more, faith in Rondon and Sharp than you and I do. Do I need to make a mistake? Probably. You know, but Theo may also not care about the bullpen as much as we think. Maybe he's not a believer in the bullpen, working from the bullpen on out. Maybe the starters can give him length. Could be all of this. You know, so I'm not going to rank them for that. As I said, I really have very little doubt that the Cubs are certainly one of the top five in the National League, probably one of the top five in baseball. I mean, offhand, I would probably go Toronto. And then probably Toronto is the only major league team I put there. You know, the Royals, it's hard to put the Royals as a great team with that starting staff. It just is. You know, Texas, Boston, I think is close, but not in the top five. I probably put the Nationals there. The Mets are close. Pirates, Cubs, Dodgers, the Giants. And then today's day and age of baseball, there's a lot of parity. There's really eight teams that are really the top eight in baseball. And after that, maybe another five teams that are being playoff contention, and every after that's terrible.
Yeah, no, Theo Epstein isn't a bullpen guy. I mean, he came out of the Moneyball era, and he doesn't believe in paying for relievers. He doesn't believe that they're reliable, and so he isn't. I guess that's my end point, is that he has his ways, he has his views, he sees players as that, and he's just not good at acquiring them. And he doesn't believe in bullpen. And I think that's just part of his core philosophy, and that's why he didn't add them. And that's the thing. But, I mean, Colorado, who isn't a contender, traded for a reliever. the Red Sox were able to trade for Carson Smith, who's injured now, unfortunately. But Carson Smith is an elite reliever. The Red Sox were able to get him for Wade Miley. And while the Red Sox could definitely use a better bullpen, and I think it's going to be a key part of their season this year. If you're the Cubs, you need Jake McGee or Carson Smith more than the Red Sox need them, or that definitely the Rockies. The Rockies have no need whatsoever for Jacob McGee, but they still added him. It seems like the Cubs should have found a way, but anyway. George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com, SiriusXM Radio. George, thanks a lot for coming on today. Thanks for talking baseball. I'd love to have you forever again, but I know I don't want to keep you. I've already kept you too long, but we'll talk more baseball in the coming days and weeks ahead. But thanks a lot for joining us today, and we look forward to talking to you again. Good luck in the draft tonight.
Good luck to you as well. My pleasure, everyone. Have a great day.
All right, that's George Kurtz from RotoExperts.com, as well as SiriusXM Radio host. You can find him over at RotoExperts.com, or if you want, just follow him on Twitter, at George Kurtz. Fantastic when it comes to fantasy questions. So if you want to talk to him about fantasy sports, ask him trade questions, opinion questions. He does a lot of that over both at RotoExperts.com, but also on Twitter. So follow him there, at George Kurtz. I am your host, Chris Mitchell. This is a podcast to be named later. If you want to join the show or recommend topics and talk baseball with us from the show, you can do that on Facebook. Again, a podcast to be named later. You can follow me on Twitter at CJMitch73. You can read my articles over at BaseballAmerica.com, MinorLeagueBall.com, and RotoExperts.com. Or if you're a fancy hockey guy, I write two daily fantasy articles on hockey every single week, Tuesdays and Saturdays. So if you want suggestions or tips on who to start for your daily fantasy sports plays when it comes to hockey, follow me on Tuesdays and Saturdays over at fantasydraft.com. I won a multiple contest last night, so I'm on a roll here. So if you are a fantasy hockey guy, we still got a couple weeks left for that, or 3 weeks, I think. So you can do that as well. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great day. Enjoy your spring baseball, and I look forward to you listening to us in the future. Again, head on over to MinorLeagueBall.com for all of my content as well as my podcasts.